Hey everybody, welcome to another episode in the Coaching Masters. Today I'm sitting down with Mike Gentzel, founder and CEO of Visualize ROI. Now when I say Visualize ROI, you probably get a sense of what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about how to use financial metrics and financial impact that you deliver and turn that into ROI, turn that into financial metrics, turn that into the business case in order to help you advance throughout the sale and convince your prospect or your buyer of the true value of what you deliver. And so a couple of things we're going to be talking about are how to build an ROI model, what goes into that, how to overcome the natural skepticism that buyers tend to have when it comes to ROI models that are produced by vendors, how to quantify, notoriously hard to quantify, professional services. And we'll talk about how Visualize ROI themselves use the ROI tool that they have in ROI metrics and models in order to advance their sales. So with that, Mike, welcome to the Coaching Masters.
Thanks. Nice to talk to everybody.
All right. So why don't we, just before we dive in, why don't you tell us a little bit about Visualize ROI? What do you do and why does it matter?
Sure. Well, what Visualize ROI does is really important today. The world's changed and buyers are tougher than ever before. It's really hard to get budget because buyers need business cases. Thanks to the recession and the wave of corporate frugality, as sellers, we need to equip buyers with a business case earlier in the sales cycle than we ever did before. So what Visualize ROI does is we make it very easy for sellers to create, publish, share, and collaborate with buyers around a business case. Our application is software as a service. It's very visually engaging. And what's nice about it is that it ties into your existing sales and marketing workflows. It ties into your CRM system. It ties into your marketing automation system. And it captures a new data set. It makes it very easy for sellers to understand where their sales cycles are effective, where their sales cycles are lagging, and enables managers to be very effective understanding what their team is doing as they present value propositions to customers throughout the buyer cycle.
Right. And so it's much, much more than just an Excel tool where you put in some data and then you get a sense of what the financial impact could be. What are some of the main benefits you would say that people start seeing when they start using a tool like yours in their sales conversations and their processes?
Well, I'm going to talk about both internal metrics and then sales cycle effectiveness. From an internal metrics perspective, the number one thing that our customers start to see is higher adoption. Every company has published at least one, if not several, ROI tools or TCO tools, but the adoption of those, typically when they're in the format of Excel or PowerPoint or some other format, is just very low. They're not easy to understand, they're not visually engaging, and they don't tie into your existing sales and marketing workflows. So when they leverage our solution, they start to see sales reps starting to use it. The sales reps use the solution because the buyers are delighted by receiving something from the sellers that's very easy to look at, easy to collaborate, easy to modify the values. Now, what does this mean then from an overall sales effectiveness perspective? Well, we're in the business of shortening sales cycles, improving win rates, and getting the bigger deal values. Sales cycles are shorter because when a buyer early in a sales cycle sees a value statement that's clear and quantitative and easy to share internally with the rest of their team, they'll get the next meeting on the calendar more quickly and they'll get the right people in that meeting because they know that the seller's here to talk about value rather than just features and benefits. The win rate goes up because now as a buyer, I can understand clearly the value that this seller is trying to portray to me relative to other solutions that I might be looking at or do nothing. A big reason that our buyers are leveraging our solution is they're basically trying to decide, our customers are trying to help their buyers decide, should I do something or do nothing? And if without a solid business case that's clear and quantitative, you'll often opt for do nothing. Of course, some deals are competitive, and in a competitive deal, you want a very clear way to present a side-by-side one-year or three-year value proposition, and our tool can enable that as well. And then in terms of deal sizes, oftentimes, it makes it really easy to understand the potential upside benefit of investing in a solution that the vendor's selling. And so when the buyer can see that, they're more quick to maybe jump in with both feet rather than kind of just dipping their toes in.
Right. And so we talk a lot about rational and emotional benefits. And so your solution is clearly positioned as a, you know, quantifying the rational benefits of investing and even more specifically, the financial benefits of investing, right? I'm just curious to know, where do you stand? There's this old saying in sales that says, you know, people buy emotionally and they justify rationally. I'm curious to know, where do you stand in that?
Well, it's a great question. And you know, I do tend to segment the world into the buckets of consumer buyers and corporate buyers, and they're very different. You know, I would say in both buckets, there's an emotional element and a rational element. In the consumer side, there's much more of an emotional element. We see frenzies these days in the different markets, real estate and stocks. A lot of that is, some of that's rational, some of that's emotional. On the corporate side, particularly as buyers are buying solutions that are, you know, $25,000 or 20,000 euros or above, it's tougher than it has been before because, again, of this wave of corporate frugality and accountability coming out of the last several years with the economic upheaval. So I think you need to equip, sellers need to equip the buyer's decision-making unit, which in a corporate environment, of course, often has several individuals, with both a very clear rational story, not to minimize the emotional side. I mean, people do buy from people, and that is the other adage that goes with that. And so to the extent buyers, you know, enjoy the process with a seller, that's important. But nowadays, buyers spend 57% of their buying process is online before they even engage with a seller. So the seller needs to go into that conversation knowing that the buyer is very equipped with a lot of data, and now you need to get them over the finish line with a rational story that's clear. And of course, not to forget, you know, treating the buyer professionally and in an effective fashion.
You talk a lot about the buyer, and you know, one of the things that I picked up on is you mentioned collaboration a lot. It sounds like what you're doing is not just the seller developing and then presenting the business case or the ROI. It's really a collaborative effort. Can you talk a little bit about how that works and, you know, what your findings are in terms of effectiveness?
Yeah, I mean, as we've been building our product over the last 3-4 years, we've gotten feedback from sellers who say that their buyers are skeptical if they're presented with kind of a one-size-fits-all ROI approach, because as we know, it's impossible to predict the future, and you don't know exactly how long it's going to take to roll out the solution. You don't know exactly what the adoption will be of the solution, et cetera, et cetera. And even if the seller leverages a few case studies where there's been effectiveness, and case study A said there was a 28% improvement, case study B said there's a 42% improvement. For this new buyer, we just don't know what it's going to be. So we talk about collaboration because it provides a lot greater credibility if the seller enables the buyer to modify the numbers themselves and even put in their own numbers. And one thing that we find is very effective is if the seller is able to help the buyer say, just choose one metric that we're going to improve. Because oftentimes sellers will present 4, 5, or 6 operating metrics that are going to improve, and that is often hard for a buyer to digest. So it's okay for the seller to present 4, 5, or 6, but then the seller can say, buyer, please do your own analysis. Choose one or choose two that you're really comfortable, you think we have an opportunity to impact. Put the everything else at 0. And at that point, the buyer says, okay, I get it. Yeah, even if it's just this one metric gets impacted, that's going to pay for itself and then some in terms of investing in this solution. So that collaboration piece is very, very important to drive credibility on the buyer's side.
Right. It sounds like you can really play around. And I'm guessing that part of the appeal is just that. It's not only about collaboration, but it's about being able to do it together. And it's about helping the buyer see the full value that you bring to the table and also be able to single out elements of that, right? By taking one dimension. What would happen if we, you know, if we improve on this lever? What would happen if we improve on that one? What would happen if we improve on both? So you mentioned online, 57% of the buying cycle happens online, and you know, there's sort of different numbers out there. I'm curious to know how, if it does, and how your solution addresses, you know, that part of the buying cycle. Is there any way in which you help buyers calculate the ROI, you know, perhaps up front before the salesperson enters the room, something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we really do believe in the idea that throughout the entire buyer's journey, from the first visit to the website, through their first engagement with you through a social channel, maybe through the first conversation with an inside salesperson, and then even post-sale with customer success and renewal, it should be the same platform to enable the buyer to calculate value. Now, what many companies do is they allow buyers to download white papers or case studies or videos that, again, are useful and informative, but still a one-size-fits-all. So what we try to do is allow the buyer to engage by just sharing a couple of data points about himself. For example, how many servers does he have? Or how many days do his employees spend traveling? Or what's his current win rate? Depending on what business the vendor is trying to help the buyer understand that they're going to improve, it would be those metrics. So we also believe that buyers have short attention spans, so we don't want to require them to supply 20 data points, and we also don't want to be too intrusive. On that first visit to the website, a buyer may be willing to share one or two or three data points or four, and if they have a pretty good idea what they're going to get from a visual perspective, then they'll be willing to do it. So we have customers that will leverage our solution to put a very engaging visual, what we call lead harvester, on the company's website that gives the buyer a real sense. Okay, I'm going to get something that's cool, that's fun, that's engaging, that's visual, and all I have to do is share two or three data points. And then what happens is the salesperson that picks up that lead has a new data set that they didn't have before, so they can enter that conversation much more intelligently than they did before, because the data that gets collected through our form goes right into the CRM system and then allows the salesperson to know exactly what that buyer saw. And they can even pull it up and look at the value statement that the buyer saw, which provides for a very good first conversation.
Right. And I'm curious to know, are there any particular industries or types of products and services that tend to adopt your solution more than others? Any concentrations there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So on one hand, I would say that every business-to-business seller should be communicating value quantitatively throughout the sales cycle. And by the way, when I say value, I don't mean only financial value. I also mean operational benefits. For example, how many hours are you going to save in a process? How many trips are you going to minimize? Depending on the person you're talking to, they may not care about the dollars and cents, but simply the operational metrics.
Right.
But relative to the industry, I put solutions into two main buckets. One are kind of evangelical sales, in the sense that the buyer, they have a process that's working okay right now, and they could very well just do nothing, versus competitive sales, where the buyer has to buy something. So they have to buy paper from one seller or another. They need to buy energy from one seller or another. In the evangelical sale, the seller has a really hard time getting the buyer to move from do nothing to do something. So we call that kind of an ROI model. And in those cases where sellers have to sell a solution which is, I don't know, $10,000 or $25,000or 20,000 euros or above, getting that evangelical sale across the finish line, it's really hard. So most of technology has an evangelical component to it. Advertising, you can have a small advertising budget, you can have a large advertising budget. The buyer of advertising needs to know that every incremental dollar is going to have an incremental benefit. So there's a lot of categories that we sell into that have an evangelical component where our solution is very relevant. On the competitive side or the cost side, this is often where it's a manufacturing solution or it's hardware, and the buyer needs to buy something just to keep their business up and running. It's almost a cost of goods sold. And in that case, we're selling kind of a total cost of ownership model, or our customers are using those, and that's very effective. But to kind of just try to summarize the best use cases for our solution, it's if the seller's selling something that's $25,000 or euros or above, or and the sales cycles are, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 months or above, and we're trying to shorten that sales cycle. And then also, if the seller has several products that they sell, then it's increasingly hard for an individual salesperson to be able to articulate the value story for each particular product. So it's nice to use a solution like ours to be able to have kind of a library of value models that you can collaborate with customers around. Hopefully that helps answer the question.
Yeah, it does. And just to make it come to life even more for the audience, can you perhaps think of one particular story or a success story, if you will, of a company that adopted a solution like yours or yours, and the kind of before and after? What kind of difference did they see? What happened?
Sure. I'll talk about one of our customers that's in the online advertising business. They sell advertising to property managers, and the property managers are trying to decide, do I list my inventory on Google AdWords, or do I list with this vendor? They're called HomeAway. And oftentimes, property managers just aren't sure how effective an advertising campaign is going to be on Google versus with this vendor, HomeAway. And several of the HomeAway sellers, when they're talking to the property managers, are able to show the value, the increase in revenue that the property manager would get, and the increase in commissions by listing their inventory with HomeAway. And so before they used our solution, the HomeAway folks would be able to get some level of investment on the part of the property manager. But after using our solution, in many cases, that initial purchase of advertising inventory was much higher. So from that perspective, that initial deal value was a lot greater because the buyer, that the property manager could visualize exactly what the potential impact was. And that marginal additional spend with advertising was so small relative to the marginal benefit they would get in the incremental commissions that it made sense to make a bigger initial purchase.
Right. And so, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, or if it's confidential, but can you give us a sense, are we talking about a couple of percentage points? Are we really talking about, double digits, or are we talking about multiples of what was before?
Yeah, no, it's significant. It's more than a couple percentage points. I can't discuss specific figures on for individual clients, but it is extremely powerful. And this company is now leveraging our solution globally after just trying it out in North America.
Okay. And thanks for being so open. So here's another question. I mean, a lot of the people that are watching this are going to be selling professional services, right? And they're often not professional salespeople either. They're management consultants, they're executive search consultants, they're executive coaches. And so something that I often hear from my clients is that professional services are notoriously hard to quantify, because how do you quantify the impact of maybe it's a workshop, or maybe it's a coaching engagement, or things like that. So I assume that you have professional services clients that do so, and that do so successfully. What are the kinds of metrics that they use, and what are the kinds of results that they're seeing?
Yeah, so in professional services, the nice thing is that there are multiple types of benefits that you can talk to clients about. Everything from internal cost savings. Often you just don't have a resource internally to complete a project that an outsourced professional services could achieve. Therefore, you would have had to go hire one or two or three FTEs that are fully loaded, which would have a significant cost impact over a 2, 3, 4 year period, whereas the professional services firm could come in for 6 months or 9 months and have an impact immediately. The other category of benefit is simply time to market or time to effectiveness. A professional services firm should be able to communicate pretty clearly that if they're engaged, they'll be able to get to the business operating result in a shorter time period than trying to do it internally would get to. And therefore, if the benefit once this project is achieved is, let's say, $500,000 a year, and if you get there 6 months faster, you're getting $250,000 in benefit quicker. Those are a couple of the ways that you can calculate it. One of our professional services clients is a company called TriNet that helps firms outsource their benefits processing and a whole host of HR functions. And they talk about savings of hours as well from the management team from having to deal with weekly and monthly administrative tasks, so they can now redeploy those hours to stuff that's productive in terms of revenue generating activities and operating the business, which is where they'd rather be spending their time. So then you can value those hours. If I save you 100 hours a month or 200 hours a month, what's that worth to you? And that's often a fun kind of dialogue to have with a potential buyer, to say, well, if I save you 100 hours, what do you think that's worth to you? It's not like maybe you're not letting a person go, but you can redeploy those hours to more productive activities.
Right, and so that's to your point about it's not just about financial impact, it's also about operational metrics and how do you know, streamline operations, how do you accelerate processes, and how do you, generally speaking, improve the functioning of the business, right? I'm curious to know, you know, there's this, I mean, if you want to know where you know, which meat is best, you go to the butchers, right? So I'm curious to know, how do you guys visualize ROI, use your own tool in your sales process, in your business development process?
Well, we use it in several ways, actually. When people come to our website, they're provided the chance to see a short video that gives them an overview of what we do. And then immediately after the video, we have a button that says, well, click here to see what this could be worth to your organization by deploying Visualize ROI. So it then presents the customer with a couple of form fields that they could fill out, understand the size of their sales organization and what their average deal size is and a couple of other metrics like that. And then it presents a very visually appealing and engaging value statement to say, well, we could help you gain this much incremental revenue this year by shortening your sales cycle, improving your win rate, and making your deal sizes greater. And then all that data flows into our CRM system. So then when the salesperson picks up the phone and calls the customer back, often what we'll do is the salesperson will share their screen through WebEx or GoToMeeting or Skype with the buyer, and we'll say, well, here's the data you shared with us. Let's collaborate around what this really could mean for you. And then the salesperson will send a link to the customer, so the customer can then open up the value proposition and play with it real time. And then we'll show the person on the other end what happens in our CRM system, that all that data that they just shared made its way back into the CRM. And oftentimes that's so visually appealing and engaging to the buyer that they'll want to take the next meeting. Our conversion rate from first meeting to second meeting is 75% or above, because we believe people like to see things a lot more than just talk about things. So that works very well for us.
It brings me to another point. You mentioned, you know, visually appealing a few times now. And I'm certainly, you know, I mean, I'm certain that the fact that it looks great is nice. But it seems to me like it's a core aspect of your offering, and there must be something behind that. So why is that? Why is the visual aspect so important?
Well, because the numbers themselves are, you know, interesting, but people's brains work different ways, and oftentimes people are visual learners, or they retain information visually. So rather than sending somebody a spreadsheet that says they're going to get $2 million in incremental revenue next year, if I put a picture in front of them that says, you know, a nice pie chart or a nice graph that says, here's where you are today at 500,000 and tomorrow it's going to be 2 million, they can retain that image. And they're more likely also, if they print it out, and we do send people these images in the form of PDF or PowerPoint or whatever, if they print it out and see that image, they're more likely to share it internally with their management team as well. So our application allows people to basically put any sort of visual representation of these numbers in front of the buyer. And then we find that's just much more engaging. There's just too much information that buyers have in text form and numerical form, but not enough images that are really hard hitting and compelling.
Right, so it's one about the learning capability and the learning styles that we're all sort of geared towards. But then the other thing is also, it's to bring out the key facts and elements in a succinct way, so they immediately sort of jump out at people. Mike, final question, actually pre-final question, but here's I mean, I'm always looking for ways, you know, things that experts like yourself know that the rest of us perhaps don't. If people on this call wanted to implement an ROI model or wanted to start thinking about how they can more clearly demonstrate the financial and operational impact of what they do, do you have a couple of tips on how to get started, things to, you know, perhaps do and things to avoid?
Yeah, I'll tell you what we've experienced many times as we've gone into customers and tried to help them improve their effectiveness at selling value. Oftentimes, they have one or two marketing or product management people who are very, very intelligent and very good with numbers, and they'll build a model which is extremely sophisticated and might actually be useful for a CFO very late in the sales cycle. But these models that get built aren't used early or often in the sales cycle by the typical sales rep, because the typical sales rep may not understand all those details. So one key tip is anything that you might build for your sales organization needs to involve the salespeople themselves in building it and owning it. And oftentimes what we recommend is we'll walk into a client and we'll say, let's hold off on looking at what you've created before. Let's listen to the salespeople talk about what are the metrics that their buyers are buying. I want two or three salespeople in a room who have sold 10 or 20 or 50 customers at least, and say, well, what have those people bought? What are the metrics that they care about? Okay, well, if we know they're buying a story around hour savings, then let's back into how your product saves hours. And then we can pull in the case studies and pull in the white papers at that time, but really leveraging the salesperson's knowledge and metrics really helps. And then the second tip is less is more oftentimes. None of this stuff matters if salespeople don't use it in those conversations. And so why are they going to use it? It needs to be quick, easy to use, intuitive and engaging, and easy to collaborate. So we can't expect salespeople to ask 20 questions of customers and fill them into a form. We can expect them to ask maybe 4 or 5 or 6 questions. And we can, you know, we can pre-populate these models with other data. And those data points can be modified later either by the buyer or by the seller in that context. But what we want to do is make it really relevant, really quick. I want to be able to enable the seller to put a value statement in front of a customer in 5 minutes or less. Let me ask you 4, 5, or 6 questions and then immediately show them a picture. And that starts to really kick off the conversation in an engaging way. So I think those are the two big ones. Involve the sellers in the process, and then less is more.
All right. Hey, Mike, thanks for sharing. Final question. How can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more?
So our website is visualizeroi.com, and it's all one word. And on the website, you can go ahead and click in and see the video and the demo. You can also email us. There's various email addresses, sales@visualizeroi.com, and there's a phone number on our website as well. We'd be happy to spend 30 minutes or 60 minutes with you complimentary, looking at any sort of ROI models or TCO models you might have created, and give you some quick feedback on how they might be tweaked to make them more readily adopted. And we're happy to show you a library of stuff that we've created for other people that's publicly available, so that you can get a sense for what best in class or best practices are today as well.
All right. If that's not an offer where, you know, it's very clear where the value lies, and I don't know what is. So Mike, with that, thanks so much for being on. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Sigo. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.